Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my good colleague, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Bill and his colleagues keep a very careful chronology and an analysis of that chronology on Long War Journal. It's part of FTD.org, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies reporting. Nonpartisan reporting on war fighting around the globe. Bill and I, in the course of our conversations over many decades, have touched all continents and still do, because the conflict continues, not only the obvious conflict that we're going to address immediately, which is the war in the Persian Gulf, but the war in Ukraine, the war in Africa, the war in the Middle East, the war across the Hindu Kush. All of that continues as we layer on new and unknown outcomes. The outcome that we have, but we don't know because we've not seen a document. There is no transparency on the negotiation so far. There are declarations by Washington, by Islamabad, by Iran, but we have no paper in front of us. A memo of understanding is that at some point in the near future, the Gulf of the Straits of Hormuz will reopen in some fashion, and that the U.S. Navy now blockading the Strait of Hormuz will leave, depart, back off in some fashion, and that oil will flow again to the needful, and so will the other supplies. That would be fertilizer, very important. That would be other subsets of resupply of the people of the Gulf, including the Iranian people who've been cut off from supply since February 28th. We're told that will happen in the immediate future. But again, what we have here is statements. We don't have paper. So I read a remark by Gideon Rockman, the chief foreign correspondent and columnist for the Financial Times, the pink paper out of London. The title of his essay, A War Without Victors. Subhead, Trump's deal reflects the failure of the military option in Iran. Bill, a very good day to you. What we're looking at here is difficult to confirm because we cannot see what the document says, which just characterized. But a war without victors describes whatever we're going to receive. That seems appropriate. Gideon Rockman goes on to remind us that our president, who has been the play-by-play announcer through this process these last days, is a genius at repackaging failure. He did so in the course of his career to get him to the White House. The casinos in Atlantic City that failed, the election of 20 that failed. Genius. And so we will hear many positive statements. And I want to come to you and ask for your measure right now. Given that we don't have paper, is the war winding down? Is the bombing winding down, or is the Strait of Hormuz opening? Those big questions. What is your measure, Bill? Good day to you.
Good day, John. Well, first, I would disagree with Mr. Rockman. This wasn't a military failure. The military was halted, right? It was halted on April 23rd with a ceasefire that really wasn't a ceasefire. You know, President Trump chose to attempt to get a diplomatic solution here. It remains to be seen whether we will actually get it. I think one of the keys here will be, will Iran de-link the situation in Lebanon between Hezbollah and Israel to this agreement? And that is remains to be seen. That's been one of the sticking points. I suspect we may continue to see a tit for tat. But, you know, again, John, this is the really hard part. The Iranians do seem, you know, the fact that they're willing to agree to some type of ceasefire, at least on paper, is an indication that they may want to get the oil flowing themselves. They certainly have taken a financial hit. We know they've taken a military hit. But, you know, I just President Trump has restrained the military from completing the job. However, I'm not certain that the military could have completed the job without a ground component. And I'm not talking about a U.S. ground component, an Israeli ground component. I'm talking about an Iranian ground component, an Iranian resistance that was willing to go up against the regime. I never saw this. So it was, you know, something discussed. It should have been planned for from the beginning of last summer, and we saw no effort. I am very skeptical, highly skeptical of the willingness of the Iranians to fight for their freedom. And they're the ones ultimately that will have to do it. But to your question, will this result in a cessation of hostilities? I suspect in the short term it may. But if the Iranians aren't willing, so this agreement, right, supposedly. And by the way, I predicted this. I think I did it here, John. I know I've done it on other television programs, that what we basically have for the short term is a reopening of the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for an end of the blockade. And that is exactly, that's the status quo from February 27th of this year, which is, you know, that was before the U.S. began bombing. And that is, you know, not in my estimation an optimal solution. The Iranians still have to negotiate an ending of their nuclear program. I don't believe they ever will. The issue of Iran's support of its proxies, Hezbollah, the Houthis, Hamas, the Iraqi militias, et cetera, that is, doesn't seem to be even on the table. The Iranians are going to drag their feet on these issues. So it would be a return to the status quo with a degraded Iranian military, with an Iranian military that, despite being degraded, has proven that it can shut down the Strait of Hormuz if it so chooses.
Henry Kissinger has a remark that I can paraphrase. The only thing that's more dangerous than being an enemy of the United States is being an ally. And what you just characterized, Bill, correctly, is the unclear fact. Did the U.S. military, in coordination with the Israeli military, lead to this agreement of returning to February 27th? And right now, has the U.S. military and the Israeli military backed off sufficiently to say that we're at peace? Because over these last days, the operations, to my understanding, in Lebanon continue. The ground operation north of the Litani River and the air operation striking Beirut, opportunity fire in these last 24 hours. That is mentioned again and again by what we have, no paper, but what we have are speakers for the Iranian position, that this must include the war in Lebanon. And, Bill, there's no indication whatsoever, and we will talk about it at a great length in our conversation this day. There's no indication whatsoever that Hezbollah has backed off, that the war is over, or that the Israelis will leave Lebanon at all, ever. Do I say that correctly, Bill?
I think you're correct. I mean, the Israelis, they cannot leave Lebanon as long as Hezbollah is committed to occupying the southern portion of Lebanon. I mean, the reality is that much of southern Lebanon is, that's a Hezbollah stronghold. So how can they give it up? But as long as Hezbollah is willing to attack Israel, and they've been doing this somewhat successfully with drones, which they're beginning to integrate into their operations, the Israelis need to keep that buffer zone because of Hezbollah's unwillingness to stop attacking Israel. And as long as the Iranians continue to link Hezbollah's cause, and keep in mind, this is what Hezbollah is doing, is part of Iran's plan to destroy Israel and promote its Islamic revolution. This is what Iran is built on, the Iranian regime, to spread its Islamic revolution. This is what has to be remembered in all of this. The proxies are a key part. The nuclear program is a key part. The Iranians, if they surrender one or both of these, what does the Iranian revolution look like? And what was the purpose of the Iranian regime? So this is why I'm very skeptical that it's willing to surrender either of these.
The Hezbollah threat to north of Israel is constant and renewed every time they fire a rocket at the northern border to keep it fluid. As I understand it, the deployment of the Hezbollah is dependent upon resupply and leadership from Tehran. So it's not a separate war. It's integrated into the war fighting we've been watching since the October attack in 23. At the same time, Phil, we can't leave out, and we will have these conversations over these next hours, we can't leave out the unknowns of Syria, the unknowns of Gaza, the unknowns of the Houthis in Yemen. All of that is not answered in any fashion by the statements that we're getting for this so-called peace deal. Where is peace, Bill, if the Houthis are locked and loaded, the Hezbollah is locked and loaded, and Hamas won't surrender? Where is peace?
That's the question, John. I could not agree more. You know, there would be peace if one side was the victor and one side was the loser. We're dealing with a regime, again, that its whole purpose is to spread its Islamic revolution. They do this via their proxies, and to ensure their proxies and Iran is safe by creating a nuclear shield. And there won't be peace as long as this regime persists. And this is why I circle back to my ultimate disappointment in all of this is the lack of willingness of the Iranian people to stand up, to fight for their freedom, and to overthrow this regime. I understand that it's an oppressive regime with 47 years in power, but you either want it or you don't want it. You either are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice or you're not willing to make that sacrifice. And I'm just not seeing that sacrifice from the Iranian people. I'm told that, you know, they lost 40 or 50,000 in a protest, and that's enough. And sadly, that's merely a down payment in what it's required to overthrow that regime. I remind people, the Afghans, more than 100,000 police and security forces, and an untold number, probably hundreds of thousands of Afghan civilians were killed trying to stave off the Taliban. While the U.S. was on the ground with air support, partnering with Afghan security forces, thousands of Americans dead in Afghanistan, as well as other foreign allies from Europe, etc. And yet we still lost to the Taliban. That sacrifice wasn't enough for the Afghan people. I'm not sure why protesting on the street in Iran would be enough to overthrow an Iranian regime, which has infinitely more resources than the Taliban, and which is just as committed as the Taliban, if not more so.
I'm speaking with Bill Rajel, Senior Fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He keeps a long war journal, and we've been looking at what we can of the reporting of the, they use the word peace, so I will too, I'm quoting, peace deal that is said to be in place for a confirmation in some fashion of a signing of some document, memo of understanding, on Friday, perhaps this week, in Islamabad, in Iran, in Washington. It's unclear to me where. And we're responding as best we can with incomplete information. When we come back, what else is necessary to attend to now that the Gulf is said to be reopening? Where are the threats? This is very carefully, we're going very carefully. We're nonpartisan about this. This is an interim deal in some fashion, and what is the future containing for all elements of the war fighting? I'm John Batchelor with my friend and colleague for many decades, Bill Raggio, and we've been overlooking at the so-called Iran deal. We don't have a paper, so I'm going to move on to the other theaters that we're going to discuss today. Bill, we've touched on Hezbollah. That's active war fighting. And the last information we had last week was that the IDF has no intention of reversing course at all. Made that mistake in 82 and led to another four decades of threat to the people of Israel. It is not leaving the Litani River. Do I say that correctly, Bill?
I believe that's correct. Unless President Trump is willing to go to the mat with Netanyahu and the Israelis and strong arm and coerce them. And that, I mean, what ability does he have to withdrawing support from Israel, ending foreign military aid, which is congressionally mandated. So I can't see that happening, but he could slow the, I'm not saying this is what he can do. He's going to do. I'm saying these are things that he could do to attempt to coerce the Israelis to withdraw. But short of that, I don't see the Israelis withdrawing from southern Lebanon anytime soon. They cannot withdraw under fire from Hezbollah.
The Houthis in Yemen, unsolved and armed with drones in these last days to remind everybody that they remain a sting that can be launched at any moment, whether they choose to launch or Tehran chooses to launch. I would say that they're, it's certainly difficult to describe them as anything less than victorious in their campaign these last years. How do you see them, Bill?
Yeah, the Houthis, look, if you wanted to see what the potential outcome for the U.S.-Iran conflict is, right, a unfinished military operation with a suboptimal so-called peace agreement, we should have seen what happened last year. We should have observed what happened last year. And again, I warned about this. Limited strikes, you know, 6-7 weeks of strikes against the Houthis, then a tentative agreement to go back to the status quo. And in my estimation, that's what we're witnessing with Iran. It left the Houthis degraded, but not defeated. And they're beginning to rearm. And as we've seen, they were capable of firing missiles and drones at Israel in the interim between the fighting with the U.S. and Israel last year, last spring, and up to now. So the Houthis remain unresolved. It's, you know, the problem is you can hurt these groups, but if you were not committed to defeating them, then they will regenerate. It will be a painful process for them. It'll be a difficult process. But again, these are, I keep saying this, these are committed religious fundamentalists. And they're going to take that pain, and with the support of Iran, and again, Iran, if it gets billions of dollars, which is what we're hearing from the U.S., and it's going to get billions from the blockade being lifted, just in that and alone, if the Iranians are committed to resupplying the Houthis are going to rearm and remain a threat to the U.S., to the Israel, and to the entire region.
We'll have a detailed report about the Houthis and about Hezbollah in the course of the conversation these next days and hours. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. A war without victors, says London. I'm John Batchelor. Yeah, very neatly done. That sets up the day, Bill.
Excellent. John cannot make it. He said he's traveling, so I just got that.
So we will, we have choices here. We can call upon someone spontaneously, or we can turn to what I know to be an important topic for us, which is the jihadis watching all this. We can only speculate what they're gleaning from this very difficult political situation. But sometimes I think that the U.S. has forgotten that the jihadis are a threat. Does that ever occur to you that we're the only ones talking about them?
Yeah, it has, John. It's they become background noise because there's been a shift to the Shia side of the coin in the jihad. That's the Iranians, obviously, and all of their proxies. The jihadists, the Sunni jihadists, they've just been operating in the background. They've been, you know, patiently fighting, and particularly in Africa. They have a victory in Syria with the head of Al-Qaeda.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.